The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, we're on. Hey, good afternoon, folks, one and all. Here I am. It's Juan. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. Weekdays, we start at 11. We go right till 2 o'clock. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI. You can always listen online at WNRI.com. Also, Simple Radio app, TuneIn Radio app. It is, in fact, just search WNRI. Same thing with Google and Alexa. This portion of the program is brought to you by K's. Stop in, whether it's lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Stop into K's right there, Cass Avenue across Woonsocket. I want to say good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live. Big shout out going out to DJ AA. We are joined by royalty here, Anthony Arrico, always known as one of the premier DJs in all of Rhode Island, has turned into the program on Facebook Live. So a special shout out to DJ AA. And just incredible. You never know who may pop up. Facebook Live, people listening to the apps and everything else. All right, folks, let's bring them on. Again, it is Political Monday. And let's say good afternoon. Managing editor from OceanStateCurrent.com, and it's Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Justin. Justin, I'd like to start with, there was quite a PR coup for Team Raimondo. For anyone that thinks that somehow this was actually an accident, big story about her in the New York Times. Always the victim, the centrist Democrat. This is, in fact, Team Raimondo kicking off part of her national campaign. She did win for the position to be the chairwoman of the National Governors Association. She has a lot vested. The state has spent a lot of money with these New York PR firms. Havis, or Havanis, I believe, is one of them, supposed to be involved with our tourism. But this is, again, these types of stories just don't happen. There was a lot here in the working, where you have press people, PR people working a certain journalist. This case, it was the writer for the New York Times. And to me, and I want to get your thoughts, but there's so much that jumps out of this. But a big part of it is, and I'm already seeing it on Twitter, various people that are discussing lists for possible VP choices. You know, you're starting to say, don't forget about Governor Raimondo, or I think we need to add Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo to this list. This is a very calculated branding effort by her and her team, where, to me, she goes out of her way to distinguish herself where she's different. She takes a jab at the lefties, as she calls them, the AOC's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, even though she's not running for president, but the Elizabeth Warrens, the Kamala Harris. Basically, I am a centrist Democrat, not a moderate. Centrist Democrat, where I believe you have to be able to work with corporations. It's about jobs. I am a centrist. I'm getting, you know, bows and arrows, both from the left and the right. But I believe in order to go forward, we have to prod corporations to do better. To me, you can't do any better than the type of play, the article she got in the New York Times. Anyone that was unfamiliar with her, start to become familiar with her. She seems like a very common sense individual. Her big tagline, you know, I'm all about, like, let's fix it. Let's just get it done. You can't be attacking corporations and, you got to find ways to just encourage them to be better corporate partners with government. So that was a huge accomplishment for Governor Raimondo in getting that piece in the New York Times.
Oh, yeah, certainly. And it's hard to know where to start. But my favorite part is right at the beginning of Frank Bruni's column, he says, I found her. I found the moderate or the centrist. As if she was sitting in her office one day and somebody knocked on the door.
Yeah.
And Frank Bruni said, I found you. Yeah, right. It's all so transparent. It's a good lesson. I mean, if you read the column, you can see when he wants evidence that she's brought economic growth and companies to the state. He cites a previous New York Times puff piece. He wants evidence that the economy's roaring. He cites the unemployment rate, which Raimondo Camps has been pushing since she's been in office, because it basically it's the only one that shows anything good. I mean, the number of jobs in the state has slowed its growth since she's been in office. But all this stuff, it's a culmination of lots of effort, so I guess you have to give him credit for that. But it shows you what you can get when you've got this expensive PR team that spans from her official government staff to the staff that she now has at the Democrat Governors Association, to her campaign staff, all of these PR professionals that are peppered throughout multiple avenues, all working with the goal of making her a prominent person and giving her some this patina of being a centrist, which just isn't true. I mean, if she's a centrist, it's only because she's the rest of the Democratic Party has gone so far left that she hasn't moved quite as quickly, and that makes her a centrist. It's like saying that the somebody in the middle of the pack running away from the volcano is actually the brave one facing up to it or something like that. But the idea that this is just some, you know, just some thing that happened to happen is not plausible. And it's a good lesson for everybody.
You know, I want you to expand on that a little bit, because I don't know if everybody fully understands the fact that, and I'm glad that you see through it, Justin, these things just don't happen. This is in a lot of working, and definitely on his radar screen. This was, you can't ask for a better piece, because she also, they're very good to cut off their critics by they include the UHIP element. They include that education needs to be repaired. So they kind of throw it in as if, like, hey, I'm not perfect. But it was very important. You really see how important it was for her to get that 52% all in. That's a big commanding element of it. You know, trounced her progressive rival, Matt Brown, trounced Fung in the general election. She now has the base. This is really flexing the muscles to show the other Democrat governors. I mean, look, there she is in the New York Times. And it's also, it's a very different article that you've read. That anyone, excuse me, has written about a Democrat recently, where to me, even the Providence Journal, after her State of the State, basically said she went down the progressive checklist, right? Which is, we're going to raise the minimum wage. We're going to, you know, make sure that women, you know, health, productive, reproductive rights, which is just going up to 9 months. This she went down the progressive checklist. And yet here it is in the New York Times, she wants to be framed not as a moderate Democrat, but as a centrist Democrat that feels that government's role is to prod, gently prod corporations to be better citizens. Now, to me, Justin, if you're Elizabeth Warren, if you're someone like that, Kamala Harris, you're not picking her anyway. But if you're a Michael Bloomberg and Joe Biden, and you happen to be, you know, successful, well, here you have someone that's, you know, can kind of act as an attack dog, who is a female. I also want to point out for people, I know, and I know other people have said this, I'm not going to be the first one, Justin, to say, well, you know, Rhode Island doesn't have a lot of electoral votes, so she's not part of the mix. But if anyone that pays attention, you know, Vice President Cheney didn't have any electoral votes with Wyoming, and that didn't stop him and Bush for 8 years. Biden is with Delaware, so that didn't stop Obama. Sarah Palin, you know, what'd she offer? Alaska? She didn't have anything like that. And then the last time around, you know, Tim Kaine really didn't offer. So as much as in the past it was part of the dynamic of then getting someone from a large state on the ticket, the most famous one was Kennedy, you know, grabbing LBJ to get Texas, I think more and more I'm just seeing it seems to be less important as much as it was in the past. It certainly doesn't hurt, but I don't know if that as important as it was in the past, and people have had success in the past where the VP was not from a huge state.
Well, I'd almost wonder if the state that she's from is almost not a factor at all. I mean, a lot of stuff in this, you just can't, nobody here believes it. And the people who are putting together this PR campaign have to know that locally people don't just go, yeah, UHIP and our terrible education system, those are a couple glitches in the system, but overall she's good. I mean, they know that's not the opinion in Rhode Island. And so I think, if anything, what they're playing for is they're looking for a centrist from Rhode Island. Then they can go to Democrats across the rest of the country who maybe aren't as far left as some of the ones on the East Coast, and they'll actually believe she's a centrist in Rhode Island. Because if they were going for our votes here, it's clear she wouldn't bring even our little bit of our voting capacity with her all together. But I think what they've done here, and if you read the language, it's very careful. You can tell they're conveying to their. I mean, Bruni's pretty clear that he thinks he's to Raimondo's left, and he's conveying to his fellow progressives that she's with you. She's just maybe a little bit more cautious, or maybe she's just picking a different kind of a pin to wear in front of the camera. But so, for example, he didn't say that she trounced her progressive rival. She just won her primary.
But right.
She trounced the Republican.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing.
Good point.
And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is not progressive or far left, in Bruni's telling, she's less moderate.
That's right. Good point.
There are a lot of these little clues that, and I love the thing about the, encouraging corporations to be better corporate citizens. And I think the next sentence is, and she's going to hit them with a 10% Medicaid tax. We're going to encourage them to be better citizens by imposing a new tax on them. So this is almost like liberal speak. And so everybody reading that understands she's with you 100%, just like the progressives do in Rhode Island. But she'll make some of these noises, and she'll even use the word corporatist to say I'm not like that, when that's indeed what she is. So I think that's how this is presented, and it's clearly definitely part of a long term strategy. Every now and then, I mean, no matter how bad her numbers have been in Rhode Island, no matter how much of a downswing she's been on, she's at key moments been able to produce one of these national puff pieces, whether they're Forbes or whatever. A couple months ago, she had a blurb in the Wall Street Journal with a little sketch of her in there. And so this is all the product of a lot of PR work and a lot of that kind of thing. And to me, when I read about her convincing victory in this time for her second term, it makes me think, well, how much is that just evidence that she knew how to game the system here in ways not only with PR, but also gaming the absentee ballot or the mail-in ballot,
that
kind of thing.
Big time.
And the savvy folks who are going to be picking a vice presidential candidate are going to be looking at that sort of stuff and her connections to the finance industry. She's one of them. She's one of the Ivy League people. That covers a lot of bases. And I think that's probably all much more of a concern to them than little old Rhode Island.
Just the picture alone in the New York Times, the loneliness of the moderate Democrat. She's standing alone in the office. And then the quote, it takes a lot of spine to be a centrist in America today. You get whacked from the left, whacked from the right. That's my life. I get whacked. Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo, in my new column by Frank Bruni of the New York Times. She identifies herself as a centrist. Almost, it's a thankless job, but hey, what am I going to do? Always the victim. I get whacked from the right. I get whacked from the left. It takes spine, but I'm someone with a backbone. This is the narrative they want of her, Justin. And this also, as I've been telling people, there are plenty of PR firms that you could have just hired in Rhode Island, but that's not the goal. She wanted a PR firm that has, this type of entrenched. You're in New York. You have connections to get in front of someone like that. I also noticed in this morning's Providence Journal, so Jennifer Bogdan, who was a good Providence Journal reporter, she is now... She just got bumped up, new $105,000 a year communications director for governor. And Mike Rea, who's leaving, says he's going to be an unidentified job in the private sector. I would be surprised if it is not something maybe in the private sector, but it's still in some way, some connection with the campaign, with her going forward. I don't know what that's going to be. We're going to have to wait and see. But, they went out of their way to show that Bogdan was the acting communications director last summer. She worked on the speech. It's all tailored to show that Jennifer Bogdan is also a female, working with the female governor, obviously high paid. But Justin, she was also one of the individuals that would do pretty in-depth reporting, especially as far as DCYF. And now she's on a different payroll. She's working for the governor. So it's a way to kind of know the issue, spin it. Raimondo certainly has seized on hire as many spokespeople as possible. If there's a good reporter at the Journal, hire them. And she has, Ray was a male. All right, so she gets another female. There's another female reporter from the Journal that works up there. But she she spares no expense when it comes to as far as spokespeople for her, communications experts. That's really, to me, where she's the most engaged, and she is willing to pay people, you know, whatever it takes to get them.
Oh, yeah. Well, she sees the value and the fact that they're the people who are going to move her career along, not anybody who can actually fix a problem like you have, but the people who can make it look like it's not her fault, or that she is working on it, or what have you. And I did have the same question about Michael Rea. It's almost like they ought to... I don't like imposing laws on people, you know, going into government or not, but it's almost like we ought to have a kind of a revolving door law that lets us know where these people go when they leave, because I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Rea, who's been in her fold for quite a while now, and himself probably sees the rising star aspect of it, is in some kind of a PR firm that's hired by her often, or even some financial firm that's holding a place for him while he jumps until she needs somebody in a campaign so he can jump back in. I think she's definitely pulling together a coterie, a crew that's with her all the way from the till the end. And so I'd love to know where he's going right now.
You know, Kathy Gregg tweeted out, people are saying this is the beginning of the Raimondo national campaign. And she said, and where is it leading to? And, you know, I put out, it's about being part of the discussion. It's about, hey, here I am. Or as he said, you know, look who I found, and I found her. And it reminds me of John Lando was a rock and roll critic, and he wrote this piece, you know, last night I saw the future of rock and roll, and his name is Bruce Springsteen. He then went on to manage Springsteen, and he's still with him all these years later. But it had that type of feel of anyone looking for someone different. I found, and she's a female, and she's a governor, and she's not afraid to take people on. But I think it's just that. It's the chatter. It's get on the list. Already I saw someone say any type of VP discussion now after the New York Times piece, you have to include Governor Raimondo. This was, you know, think of today. She's fielding emails, phone calls from other Democrat governors that obviously saw the piece and will make the rounds. This is a way. Joe Scarborough put out a good tweet about her. With Raimondo, you want to be part of the discussion. You want to become a name. You want to be someone that the New York Times knows, who Chris Matthew knows, who Joe Scarborough knows, who Kamala Harris knows. You want to become part of the discussion, and then, you know, that gets someone else to write about you. That's what it's about. And that, to me, was the launch, the official launch of her national campaign, to be part of the discussion, whatever that discussion may be, but at least be talked about, be a name, be recognized, be known. Maybe you end up on Bill Maher, you know, some Friday night as a guest on his show. But just start to be someone that is one of the talked about people in the party. That's what I see. I see it's not so much this is Kamala Harris kicked off her campaign for the presidency. Raimondo, this New York Times piece, kicked off her piece of let's be part of the national discussion.
Oh, yeah. And the end of it was expressing almost some like a sense of regret. I could have missed the boat for the presidential campaign, which read to me kind of like, you know, my door is open for offers.
Exactly.
So it's just going to take somebody coming in going, we need Raimondo to step in and
that's
save
right.
us from this field of
yep.
far left Democrats. And then she'll say, well, I didn't want to do this. I'm enjoying my job working
yep.
for the people of Rhode Island. But since you asked, I
yes.
guess I'll run for president, something like that. That's definitely a door that's open for her. And what we'll see as she gets this attention and starts doing shows that are filmed in California and what have you, we'll start seeing less and less of our governor, which after her performance in the first term is going to be quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, no, I agree. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. We're speaking with Justin Katz. Before we talk about such a press on abortion, Justin, in Friday's paper, Friday Channel 12 had a story, and then in Saturday's Providence Journal, they started to go through some of the absenteeism. Now, last week, Joe McNamara wrote a piece, well, a big problem with the test scores is that the kids are chronically absent. And he doesn't go on to mention it, but Rhode Island students actually are seventh highest in the nation as far as being chronically absent. Well, Rhode Island teachers are third highest in the country as far as chronic absenteeism, 10%, which is 18 days that you're out. Central Falls, the number is over 70% of teachers in Central Falls chronically absent. And Providence, the schools are 1 and 2. Within the story, it's usually some of the same excuses, but you start to see. Now, Vartan Gregorian School, that's right on Wickedon Street, Fox Point, that is the jewel, the highest performing public school in Providence. And you have a mother they talked to who pulled two of her sons out of there because it became a running joke. One of the children, the teacher, was never there on Monday and Friday, basically working 3 days a week because they bank so many days. And then another child, I think once a week, the teacher was out. They split up the first grade. So then you have 35 first graders in one class, 35 in the other one. And, you know, teachers get at least 15 days. If you're out for more, 4 consecutive days, you need a doctor's note. Otherwise, you don't. I know that the sick days accrue. So even if you don't use your 15 days, they then roll over the next year. So you think of someone that only uses, quote, 10 sick days a year. Over 10 years, that's 50 days you accrue. Plus, then you get 15 more on top of that. And it sounds like you actually have teachers that are teaching literally 3 days a week, calling in every Monday and Friday. And I've yet to hear one politician speak out about the abuses in Providence. You know, it's amazing, Justin, before you get your reaction, all of this crying about the Fane Tower, and, you know, there's going to be a group and they're raising money and the Fane Tower, you can't have that. And yet so far, now I know the answer is anyone of means in Providence is not sending their children to public schools, but silence from any politician regarding what is obvious abuse by teachers and the chronic absenteeism.
Well, it's not only silence from the teachers. I mean, from the politicians. It's silence from everybody, except, you know, Providence Journal, basically, and the superintendent in Providence. I mean, you see the student groups. They'll march to the General Assembly for some left-wing cause or other, or they want more money for their schools, that kind of thing. But you don't see them marching on the school committee to declare maybe they shouldn't be able to take this many days off. That's what kind of... It really struck me in Ted Nesi's blurb about this in his weekend column, because he quoted the superintendent of Providence Schools, how he's going to start disciplining teachers who are excessively absent. And Nesi notes that, you know, he's going to have trouble doing that because of the contract that they just signed. And that is the key here that very few people talk about. The contracts. Why are we signing contracts with labor unions where the work year is 180 days, and still you get off weeks of vacation, you get more than 2 weeks of sick time that accumulates up to 150 days, and then you get paid for it. And you get, they have, a lot of them have personal days, days off for union work. If we really think this is a problem, stop signing these contracts. Just let's acknowledge that people who get the entire summer off and every, you know, what is it? You get February, April, Christmas, there's one in the autumn. You get weeks off just all throughout the year. Maybe we don't need to give them whatever it amounts to, 4 full weeks of paid time off or 5 full weeks of paid time off. And that's where you get this problem. You can't give employees all these benefits and say, but you're not really allowed to use them. We're going to get angry if you actually take off the days that we allow you to take off.
Right.
It's just absurd. And that's where the buck really has to stop. And it's not the General Assembly. It's not even necessarily, you know, any given town council or school. It's the school committees. And Providence is a little different, which is why I hesitated there. It's mainly the school committees that are giving these things away. And then, you know, just acting like, oh, it's a mystery. Why are all these employees taking time off? Because you're letting them. That's part of the package. And that's where we really need to start focusing. And that's where the kids and their parents and all of the people who get upset about everything that has to do with education need to start really going to these meetings and demanding that this practice be changed. And it's at the point now where you start to wonder if you're getting into having it be a management issue, that if a dispute came to the Supreme Court of Rhode Island, they might say, yeah, you can't negotiate that many sick days anymore.
I think that's what it would take, Justin, because right now, the way it is set up, and people also should keep in mind, it's not even like they have to call. You just go online on your computer, and the teachers mark off, I will be out sick using a sick day. this Friday and then the following Monday, and boom, that's the end of it. And you go back Tuesday. No one's ever terminated from it. You know, I've also, in some districts, they even have a sick bank where, let's just say, you know, you want to put up two extra sick days you're not going to use, and then there are some teachers that then they need them, so then they can take from the bank. So everyone's, like, contributing, like a community-type thing. And then I've heard that sometimes there are problems with it because some teachers feel some of the teachers are taking from the bank and they're not, you know, putting the, those in. So it's, to me, it's totally out of control. But look at two areas that we've had major, you know, Warwick 2 years ago, you know, they were walking out and all the protests and everything else. And Providence, it was last January where the Providence teachers shouted down. Lorza could not even do his State of the City address. Was it over conditions? Was it over test scores? No, it was over the contract. They had just gotten a new contract. They wanted another contract. And the Providence Teachers Union, because they have the largest number of teachers, as you know, very, very powerful. The teachers unions in the state, American Federation of Teachers, which is Warwick and Providence, and then NEA Rhode Island. I noticed on Live Experiment again, Bear's on the panel. Hummel says, let's go over the issues. And who's there? He has Mark Smiley, who was former GOP chairhead. He had Eva Mancuso, former head of education. And then right in the middle, Bob Walsh, NEA Rhode Island, who's basically then just arguing on behalf of the union and then talking about what's wrong with education and everything else. They continued. The union leaders continue to be treated as educators, which they're not. But there's no outcry about it. And you're right. It's something that it's so absurd how it would not stand in the public sector. And I know for a fact, because of my children attending public school, when people hear about snow days and how they have to go to the end and, oh my God, the kids are going to be in school until June 20th, there's no way. Those teachers are already gone. They use up the rest of their sick days and boom, they're not going in for the final 3 days of school. It's all subs. They're checked out. It's not even use it or lose it. It could then just roll over. But Justin, you know, think about it. It's almost incomprehensible to someone in the private sector if you're sitting there and you have 50 sick days that have accumulated over time to the point. I mean, think about that, where that teacher at Vardin Gregorian, she's, I'm assuming it's a she, but is it really only working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, calls out sick every Monday, Friday, or not even call out, just check off. And even the provision of, if you're out 4 consecutive days, you need a doctor's note. As long as you could do 3 days as long as you want, as long as you don't hit that 4 days. But you see someone that really could set them into a situation of you just start to, you know, you're off every Monday and Friday. There's no way the children are going to succeed in the classroom with that types of chronic absenteeism.
Right, and I think that parent complaining about that experience really kind of indirectly points the spotlight on the solution here, and it's school choice, which is this week or last week was school choice week. But if you have, I mean, if you send your kids to private school, and whether you have financial aid or not, you're putting some money down, or at least it has that feeling of something that you are deciding to purchase, even if somebody else is paying for the whole thing. You're not going to tolerate a teacher who's out 2 days a week every week. It's just not going to happen. You're going to, the first couple weeks, it becomes the family joke. Week three, you're calling the principal or whoever it is that runs the school, and you're saying, I am pulling my kids if this isn't fixed. And it's going to be fixed because you have a choice. We don't have that in the public schools run by the government. You have unionized labor that runs the school districts, essentially, and there's no choice. That's your default school, and if you want some other option, in Providence, you can shuffle around a little bit, but that doesn't, you know, that, as we're seeing in our discussion right now, that only helps with so much. But within the government schools, you can't get out. And so you have this situation where parents feel trapped unless they can find more money beyond their tax dollars to pay for a private school. But that's the solution. That's kind of the accountability we need in Rhode Island. And that's the kind of accountability that could actually fix these problems within just a couple of years, let alone, you know, we talked about Ken Wagner and how he was talking, how the education commissioner, and how he was saying, you know, we're not even ready to start fixing the problem. So give it a couple of years and then we'll try to fix the problem. And then we'll have a 10-year. So now you're talking a full, you know, kindergarten through high school experience of a student while we're trying to figure out how to fix the problem. If you create a situation where parents can say, that's enough, we're taking our child out and you're losing the money that is associated with our child, that will fix it right away. These contracts will stop being signed. These teachers who are giving the schools a bad name by being out so much, they will stop or they will be replaced. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And it's the discussion. I think it's the discussion maybe why nobody wants to touch these kind of conversations in politicians, because that's where it leads. You need the accountability, and that's the only way I see to get it.
Yeah, and also, as I mentioned earlier, Governor Rundle, that's when her children did go to public school, that's where they attended. And I think, you know, for the mother of those students, say, it became the family joke, like the teacher's car isn't even there. And this is the highest performing school in Providence this is going on. Never mind some of the other ones. The last thing I want to mention, I saw this on Twitter yesterday. June Speakman, running for state representative, District 68, Bristol Warren. And what is her big element of running? Committed to passing the Reproductive Health Care Act of 2019, protecting the reproductive freedom of Rhode Islanders, including access to safe and legal abortion. Justin, they had the big rally last week. That is the priority of Seoul. Many of them up there with all the problems in the state. None of the legislators have had any type of, it's not a commitment to improve education for public school students. They had the rally last week at the state house. They were all, you know, some of the quotes again on Twitter, I've never been so proud to stand with these women. And this is the most important issue facing our people at time at this time. Nothing about jobs, nothing about the amount of people leaving the state. Nothing about education. Their number one priority is they want to extend and make Rhode Island, as one of the state senators said, let's be like New York. And it's all of this, quote, reproductive health, which really just would push the limits of past 24 weeks as far as abortion.
Yeah, the whole thing is so Orwellian, it's hard not to see it as almost like a cult. It's part of their identity. They want their state to be, put their down their marker that it is a really big abortion state. This is their, you know, it's like some people have said that it's like a sacrament to the radicals in the Democratic Party, especially, that this is a key thing. It's part of their identity, and you can see it even in the language that they use. I mean, whether you think it's right or wrong or whatever, you cannot in good conscience call abortion reproductive health care, because you're not reproducing. You're deliberately not reproducing. It's not reproductive health care. So much of the rhetoric is like that. I mean, there was one Providence City councilwoman who was at the rally in Providence at the State House, and she was saying, you know, it's a social justice issue about access for minority women. If you look at the statistics, Black Rhode Islanders are about 6 to 7% of our population, but they account for 16% of all abortions.
Which means
abortion is killing more than twice as many Black children as white children. Every 2 years, 1% of the Black population is killed by abortion. And to say that this is somehow evidence that they don't have access and we need to protect their access, well, it's kind of just, you have to have been drawn into this sort of cult of abortion to actually believe that kind of talk. We had an article last week by one of our contributors, Larry Gilhaney, who's a millennial, and went down to Washington for the March for Life, and he was kind of surprised at how young the movement is on the pro-life side. And if you look at the crowd at the State House, it's older women mainly.
That's right.
The progressive ideologues. They brought forward one 16-year-old who said, you know, this is about my ability to plan my family, which is kind of strange, because, you know, you can, for most intents and purposes, plan your family and have children when you're ready by not doing the things that create children.
Right.
So that's really what it's all about. And it's really this scary, deceptive movement. Like the ACLU has been out there saying that a lot of Anastasia Williams, another representative, has a less extreme version of the bill. And the ACLU is saying many of the provisions are unconstitutional. But their whole argument for having a law in Rhode Island in the first place is that the Constitution could effectively be changed by the Supreme Court. So at that point, those provisions would not be unconstitutional. There's so much misinformation and deception you have to buy to buy into this. It's really disturbing that it gets such play to the point that you can almost not tell which you're reading, a mainstream news organization just covering this stuff, or the activists on certain websites in Rhode Island for the far left. It's that strange and that surreal. It's really disturbing.
That, and also I noticed, I think on Twitter, some of the reaction was, you know, and it kind of is like that Marsha Ranglin thing where she said, you know, shut up if you've never been in a classroom, been a teacher. There was a lot of, you know, you have no right to comment. I think it was a comment on Twitter from one of them, Kazarian, or one of the others, of to a man. Well, you know, you have no right to comment because you've never known what it's like to be pregnant and carried a child and everything else. But I think what was just astonishing to me was the cheering, the hoopla, pep rally atmosphere, and then how they were all, it is like a cult, patting themselves in the back. You know, it was so incredible to be surrounded by these amazing women, and Agello's the head of them, and it's so inspiring to be surrounded by them, and they do. It's ridiculous for them to even call it the Reproductive Freedom Act, but as you know, the left, and especially the progressive, they're all about, you know, disguising language, the way you frame something, putting in language that makes it seem like one thing when it's actually something else. But to me, as someone watching it, that to me came across as like their number one priority. Yeah, they care about maybe some of the other stuff involved at the State House, but some of the big things that come out, Tansy again continues to talk about her main priority up at the State House is legislation on sexual harassment. And with these women, obviously, it's, quote, reproductive freedom, which really is just the ability to have an abortion at 9 months. Nothing to do to me, Justin, with what I would call real problems facing the state, which are high taxes, lack of jobs, people moving out, elderly that can't afford to retire here. The things that you really hear from people, when you talk to someone of why they leave the state, no one is talking about the things that these people are talking about. It's so self-indulgent and self-absorbed, but they're also incredibly proud of themselves. And it is cultish the way they, you know, pat each other on the back, and the way they were all, you know, it was so emotional, and this was one of the greatest days at the Rhode Island State House. And they're completely out of touch with why people are frustrated regarding taxes, lack of jobs, children graduating from college, there's nothing here, moving to Florida, moving out of the state, you know, housing and everything else. Those, to me, trump anything that these people are talking about. I want to give you the final word on it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But out of touch is definitely the word. And the degree to which they have to manipulate language, on Twitter, Senator Gail Golden was having a discussion with Catherine Gregg from the Providence Journal about another state and the danger of a legislation there that would increase restrictions. I guess a court had knocked down a rule that would increase restrictions when you can detect a baby's heartbeat in the womb. And if you don't even have to, I'm pro-life, very pro-life, but you don't even have to be that to kind of shake your head at the idea that these women are, and men among them too, including Seth Magaziner, apparently our treasurer, that they're very concerned that when you can detect a heartbeat, you can't kill the baby. Just to say it kind of objectively. So when they have a heartbeat, you still need the doctor to be able to suck out their brains and tear them limb from limb in the womb. That's very important for reproductive health care. It's not surprising to me that people who can't see how disturbing that is or ought to be also can't see how it's disconnected from the day-to-day lives of Rhode Islanders and the things that they really ought to be focused on. But of course, they can't go there because then they'll have to admit that every other policy that they support is just as flawed.
Right. Folks, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Cass. Justin, excellent, and we'll talk to you again.
Have a great week. Thanks.
All right, folks, there he is, Justin. And again, that will be available if you go to WNRI a little bit later under podcast. It's John DePietro. With that, we'll open up the phone lines to you on this Monday, 401-766-1380, 766-1380. I want to remind you about our friends at Mega Disposal. Call them today, 866-420-MEGA. 866-420-6342, Mega Disposal, local family-owned and operated trash recycling collection company serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts for almost two decades.
Let's get a dumpster in the driveway. Throw it out with Mega. Mega Disposal. 866-420-MEGA. 866-420-6342. Phone line 766-1380. You can email me, john@dipietro.com. john@dipietro.com. Now remember, we saw last week that woman who had her life saved with in Boston, that man abducted her. How was it saved? Because of her iPhone, because of her phone. Folks, not only is the phone a tool with apps, it also could be a life-saving device. And the king of all cell phones is our friend Sal, who joins us. Good afternoon, Sal.
Here I am, JD. Good afternoon.
There you are. Go right ahead, Sal.
It's a great time to switch to Metro by T-Mobile. What's got everybody coming in, what's got Dave from North Providence, Mark from Woonsocket, and the legend from Cranston, Anne from Cranston, she made the switch. The Metro by T-Mobile.
I think that is fantastic. Anne from Cranston stopped in and switched over.
She's going to be calling you. Short story, I didn't know it was Anne from Cranston when she was in the store. She's
unbelievable.
When she called me on the phone, it sounded like, I said, I have to ask you a question. Don't take this the wrong way. Is this Anne from Cranston? And she says, yes, this is Anne from Cranston.
Look at that.
So Anne, I didn't know it was her. She called me. She had a question, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I didn't get an autograph. We're in the store.
Royalty for crying out loud. Should have had a photo taken right on the spot, Sal.
We are. She's gonna come back in. I'm gonna have a full spread here. Might have lunch in the store with Anne from Cranston. So she's gonna come back. She's awesome. Anne from Cranston's great. So she's gonna come back in. She did make the switch. Granted, she only got a flip phone. The smartphone's too much for her to handle.
That's okay.
We got to switch over to Metro by T-Mobile. But
good.
A lot of people have been reaching out. $60 a month, all in, all unlimited data, unlimited minutes, unlimited texting. And the best part, you're going to get unlimited Amazon Prime access for the life of the plan. So as long as you have the $60 unlimited plan, you will have unlimited Amazon Prime access, unlimited two-day shipping, the unlimited movie watching, the music listening, the discounts at Whole Foods, all the great benefits that Amazon Prime, that they give you, with the regular Prime, and it's the regular Prime. You're going to get it with our Amazon Prime with the unlimited $60 plan. It would normally cost you over $100 a year. Don't do it. Switch to Metro by T-Mobile and get on the $60 plan, and you'll get it for free included in the $60 plan for life. It's a great opportunity to switch if you have a small business or a small family. If you've been putting it off, the motto I've been saying, new year, new me, new phone, this is a great time to switch to Metro by T-Mobile. And your listeners have been reacting. They have been reaching out to me. It's a fantastic time. I'm so easy to find. I'm in Johnson. I'm right next to Johnson Town Hall. If you know what Johnson Town Hall is, then you know where I am because I'm right next door. It's the Town Hall Plaza, 1503 Atwood Avenue in Johnson. You can come down here every day, 10 to 7, Monday through Friday. Saturday is 10 to 5, where we do Saturdays with Sal. But call me during the week to make an appointment to come down on Saturday because Saturdays are a great time to come down.
They are.
Give you that the one-on-one. If you have questions, you need help with the apps.
Yep.
Maybe you need a new profile picture. I can help you set a new profile picture. Maybe you have some people harassing you and you need to be blocked. We can do that as well. But I can help you. I want to help you. If you want to give me a call, if you want to call me before you come down, reach out to me. 332-5051. 332-5051. Again, I want to help you make the switch to Metro by T-Mobile. And maybe you're happy with your current provider, and that's okay. Maybe you have problems with your social media. I can help with that. Bluetooth related, anything smartphone, tablet related, I can help you. Call me, reach out to me. 332-5051.
And even, folks, there he is. Even Ann from Cranston stopped in and visited Sal to upgrade her cell phone. All right, with that, phone lines are open. 766-1380, 401-766-1380. You can email me, john@dipietro.com, john@dipietro.com, and then follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DiPietro Show. Again, big story of the day is Tom Brokaw under fire for his comments yesterday on Meet the Press. And then I mentioned the story regarding a Duke professor who was forced to resign after she sent an email to her first year medical students at Duke who happen to be Chinese. And she was encouraging them to try to speak English more. Instead of that, she then got fired. I'm seeing right now on Twitter, trouble to learn Aaron Ruggenberg, fossil fuel billionaires have bought Rhode Island politicians. Time for a Green New Deal in Rhode Island. He's going to be working for the mayor of Providence. What an absolute joke. Mayor Alorza, this is from Dan McGowan. Mayor Alorza calls chronic teacher absenteeism a disturbing trend that needs to improve. Well, yet he signed contract with 15 sick days a year. Can you imagine, folks? That can also roll over. Who's ever heard of something like that? Yeah, a disturbing trend. How do they not know about that? Of course it is. Disturbing trend that needs to... A disturbing trend. It's been going on for a while. Providence school officials warning teachers they could face discipline for excessive absences. Mayor Alorza said Monday he wants to instill a culture of accountability in his city schools to ensure educators will regularly show up for work. Alorza spent much of 2018 in a contract dispute with the city's teachers, called chronic absenteeism among teachers a disturbing trend that needs to improve. 18 days a year they call in sick. There's only 180 days. 18 days is chronic. And there's more of that. There's even more than 20. More than 18, 20. Do the math. That's an extra month vacation. So there's clear evidence teacher absences have a detrimental impact on student achievement. But no one called them on it. In a presentation being delivered to the Providence School Board, the school district identified 8 city schools more than 20% of teachers considered chronically absent. One of the schools, 30% of the teachers. Of course no one's learning. The presentation also suggests teachers were more likely to be absent on Mondays and Fridays. Yeah, it's called a 3-day weekend. Except at one of the schools, the teacher was out every Monday and Friday. And it rolls over. And there's no penalty. And he signed into their contract that they can do it. So they're going to laugh at him. He doesn't have any power over anything like that. Why would they then, who would cave? Why did they give it to him like that? Why on earth did they give them the opportunity to then even have that? I'm seeing more. The New York Times has different definitions of moderate. $10 billion budget with a population of 1 million. The loneliness of the moderate Democrat. Folks, that's Governor Raimondo. The push is on, and her people are pushing her big time to get more on the national stage, to get more, more interviews, more press. That is her top priority right now. It is not improving education. It's not to improve anything like that. Her number one goal right now is to attempt to get as much national press as possible. That's what Governor Raimondo and her team are working on. Now, as far as Tom Brokaw, this was Tom Brokaw yesterday, who's under fire. This was him yesterday on Meet the Press. Oh, why did I do that? Hold on, folks. Here it is. Here's Brokaw yesterday on Meet the Press.
I don't know whether I want Brock.
Here we go.
Right? Like it's, and a lot of this we don't want to talk about, but the fact is, on the Republican side, a lot of people see the rise of an extraordinary important new constituency in American politics, Hispanics, who will come here and all be Democrats. Also, I hear when I push people a little harder, I don't know whether I want brown grandbabies. I mean, that's also a part of it. It's the intermarriage that is going on and the cultures that are conflicting with each other. I also happen to believe that the Hispanics should work harder at assimilation. That's one of the things I've been saying for a long time. You know, that they ought not to be just codified in their communities, but make sure that all their kids are learning to speak English and that they feel comfortable in the communities. And that's going to take outreach on both sides, frankly.
All right. Well, that was Brokaw yesterday. And then I don't know what happened. Tom Brokaw was on Meet the Press and he was then trying to clear up and walk back some of his statements, but he couldn't do anything on Twitter. I don't know what his problem was. You would think something as serious as this, he would have someone that could put out a statement on Twitter for him to try to clear it up a little bit. But that did not happen. Brokaw said he's truly sorry for his remarks about Hispanics on Meet the Press. Should work harder at assimilation in American culture. Criticism erupted after Brokaw, 78 years old, commented on Hispanics and assimilation during Meet the Press, said in the show his view long time. He never intended to disparage any segment of our rich, diverse society, Brokaw said. During the segment, he was challenged by his comments. We also need to adjust what we think of as America, said one person. You're totally talking about assimilation. I grew up in Miami. People speak Spanish, but their kids speak English. The idea we think Americans can only speak English as if Spanish and other languages weren't always part of America is in some ways troubling. Punch in the gut. Some journalists on social media quickly criticized Brokaw's comments. Aura Bogato, an investigative immigrant reporter, said Brokaw was arguing classic white supremacist talking points in a deeply racist rant on national television. Julio Ricardo, the founder of Latino Rebel, said the broadcast was difficult to watch. It was a punch in the gut. It was not only factually incorrect, it was also xenophobic in action. Speaking on CNN Newsroom later in the day, liberal commentator Maria Cardona said she loves Brokaw, but he's a little out of touch. I'll give him a pass because he's probably not up to speed where things are today in his age. But other than that, no. And then I don't know what the hell happened with him with his Twitter feed where he was trying to, I don't know what was going on. He was trying to put something out. It wasn't coming out properly. And then it was just like one big mess. So, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. I think the story about the professor at Duke is far worse about what Brokaw was saying. I don't know what Brokaw meant about the brown babies, but neither one of them are wrong. And they're talking about if you want to, you know, try to advance in American society, that you need to be able to master the English language. If there's a barrier, then you're going to be limited as far as how far you can, you know, move up in something like that. You know what's also interesting is I know President Trump is having a tough time. Chris Christie has a new book out. Former governor of New Jersey. I think he does a decent job on Good Morning America. But Chris Christie, he is saying in his new book that the biggest problem with in the Trump White House is Jared Kushner, that the president relies on him too much. I'm just reading some quotes here. Kushner tucked into his typical salad. This Russia thing is over now because I fired Flynn. Christie said he started laughing and the president asked why. They thought that by firing Flynn, the Russian thing would be over. So he's got a new book out. And he also talked about Roger Stone and where that goes. But I agree. But more and more you hear from people, folks, that it is Kushner in that Trump White House who is chaos ever present in the White House. I'll have to read that. That it's Kushner who is giving the president poor advice and, you know, has really got himself into a box on the shutdown. So Chris Christie, basically, he blames Jared Kushner, but Kushner was the one that had him removed from the campaign because Christie had gone after Kushner's father.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know. With his talk show on your radio, he's John DePietro. Tune in your radio.
That's right.
Go get him, Johnny D.
Hey, listen, folks, it's John DePietro. Enjoy this Monday. Stay warm. We're back tomorrow at 11. Remember, follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show. You can email me, john@depietro.com. And you can also go to WNRI.com, and the entire show is then rebroadcast under podcast. The Dion Experience is next right here, AM 1380, 99.9 FM, WNRI.
WNRI and W236CW Woonsocket, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.